This is the Horse Radio Network.
This is episode 603 of the Dressage Radio Show, official podcast of the United States Dressage Federation, on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you by ProStride. On tonight's USDF episode, we will have a discussion with rules expert Janine Malone. And after that, we have interviews with para riders Charlotte Merle Smith and Andy Sue Roth. To finish, we're going to answer a listener question.
This is Reese Koffler-Stanfield from Loxahatchee, Florida.
And this is Philip Parks, still from Rockwood, Ontario, and you're listening to the Dressage Radio Show.
Hi, Phil. I know this is so hard because this is normally the time you would come visit us or, you know.
Be somewhere exotic.
Or you would be somewhere really cool because you and Meredith every year take these amazing trips. So you usually come to see, visit us in Wellington, and then you usually go on this like amazing exotic trip.
It's just trying to just getting into a groove, actually. You know, that's I think that's the whole COVID thing, is like get into groove. You know, it feels like the movie Groundhog Day.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
No, every day kind of seems like the last day and whatever, but that's my advice, you know. Just accept it and
go forward. Yeah. And I think that's wherever you are, right? Like, so yes, I am very, very blessed to be in Florida, but my husband's here with me. Travis is here. And honestly, we don't go out. We don't really go out, right? We're here on the farm and we ride and we work and we go to sleep and we start again. And now granted, it's great because the weather's nice and you can be outside more and you can sit out and those things. But when
I heard
comes
you had
to
snow, did you have snow?
I had a good thick chunk of ice on my truck this morning. I couldn't believe it. I've been coming here and I couldn't believe it. I've never seen it.
And what about falling iguanas?
There were falling iguanas and there was a snuggle alert last night. That's a very important Florida thing. I didn't realize that was a thing, but a snuggle alert always comes up, and with a snuggle alert, it's falling iguanas. So yeah.
Okay.
I know. Who knew? I'm not a Floridian.
Beware,
but it's a thing. And we have iguanas here at our farm. So like, I do actually kind of pay attention to that. Like maybe they'll fall from the sky. So it is a thing. Yeah. And I had ice on my truck this morning. So, it was cold, but you know, the thing is it warmed up to about 75 today, which is amazing. So Fahrenheit. But, we have to really watch colics. It's actually a real thing here. It's really, we had an older guy here of ours. He colicked. We caught it quickly, but there was such bad winds. I've never seen winds like we had the other. It went on for 2 days, and they were. I rode, but it was one of those days. I was like, I'm not sure it's safe to ride because there was just stuff flying all over the place. It was unbelievable. I've never seen winds like that. It really was insane. But we have a horse show this weekend. So tomorrow morning, Big Mike does the Pre-St. George, and we have all levels going tomorrow. It should be really fun. And it's pretty intense. So we've been showing pretty much every weekend. So keeping us out of trouble for sure. And props to the horse show, to all the horse shows and people that are going to the shows, right? Like everyone recognizes that they need to distance and wear a mask and be safe. And, it's been great. And the shows are pretty strict about it, which I'm fine with. We want to all continue, to keep coming to the shows. So, this weekend is here at the White Fences, and they're real strict. And again, it's fine. So I hope that that's a good model for going forward this summer for everybody, that you can be safe. You can show. There's a lot of showing out of the trailers going on that maybe didn't happen before. So it's all good. It's been good.
Great.
Yeah. So really, really good. So, and next week we have the CDI, which is really exciting. I haven't ridden in a CDI in 11 years. So I'm really looking forward to that. It's very different than it was 11 years ago. Like very different.
Totally different location. You know, the totally different location. Across the street. Yeah.
You know, like 11 years ago, there wasn't really computers. So everything's online. Like it's been a learning curve for sure, but it's really, I'm really excited to be back in the big ring and, really excited with my partner Bingo. So looking forward to it. So we're full steam ahead down here. And again, we're able to sort of show right now. And then I give my horses a break now in the summer. So I flipped my seasons, when it's hot in Kentucky, I like to go visit Phil. But it probably won't happen this year. But I like to go to Canada in the summer. But yeah, it's really good. So I'll Perfect. Give a full Perfect. Report on what it's like to be at a CDI for the first time in a long time. So looking forward to that.
That sounds great. So we do have a good show coming up.
We do. We have a great show.
All things rules with Janine. I have an appreciation for all the steps and the different committees that go into kind of making a rule or changing a rule, and we're going to get a great explanation all about that. And then we have a friend of the Horse Radio Network, Charlotte Merle Smith, who is a para rider who just competed at I think was her first CPDEI.
That's right.
I said it wrong, but that's okay. And after that, we've got another para rider, Andy Sue, who is going to tell us all about her experience. And we've got a great trainer tip with Reese and I that we're going to be answering an email.
ProStride is the all-natural solution for lameness. It uses the power of your horse's own blood to relieve pain, reduce inflammation, and improve mobility to keep them sound. ProStride can be completed stallside by your veterinarian in just 20 minutes with no need for trailering. ProStride is backed by years of science and success stories. Olympians to pleasure riders, trainers, horse owners, and their veterinarians trust the improved performance and lasting results reported with a single injection. No series, no daily supplements, and no monthly regimen. When every stride counts, demand the difference they deserve. Ask your vet about ProStride. Learn more at ProStride.com.
Founded in 1973, the United States Dressage Federation has become the largest organization to represent a single Olympic equestrian discipline. At nearly 30,000 members strong, USDF is your connection to dressage education, competition, and achievement. Visit usdf.org to learn more about USDF education, competition, and award programs, and to shop our online store. Again, that's usdf.org, your online destination for dressage.
Well, tonight it is truly my honor to have Janine Malone on. She is really the one who knows it all about rules. She is the USEF Rules Working Group Chairwoman. She is the USDF Rules Advisory Group Chairwoman. She is the chair of US Equestrian Federation Competition Management Committee and USDF Regional Championship Committee. Janine, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, we were talking about the intro, and one of the reasons we have you on tonight is to talk about how rules start at USDF. It's a very confusing process, and I'm even on the committee with you, the USDF Rules Working Group, and sometimes I'm even confused. So we were going to have you just start to talk about what you do, what each committee does, and how rules are passed. I'll hand it to you.
Okay, thank you. It is confusing, and the guidelines change frequently, which makes it even a little harder for some of us who've been doing it for years. And I have been pretty much in this role for probably 25, maybe 30 years now, which is a long time. So, things have gotten more complicated, partly because the sport, at least our sport, dressage, has developed so many more programs that have their own rules now and have to be addressed by USEF and USDF. First, to just explain, USDF is the official discipline affiliate for dressage of US Equestrian Federation. And so USDF has review capability for things that are originating in USEF. And now, for the first time in the last couple of years, USDF can actually put forward rules for USEF, and all those things have to be reviewed by the other group. So Basically, if things come first to the U.S. Equestrian Federation Rules Working Group, they would also go to the USDF Rules Advisory Working Group. And we also review, and each group would make comments and vote on things wherever they originate. Some rule changes actually come from outside, from members. They come from outside of U.S. Equestrian Federation. The USDF committees and councils and the executive board can also have things they want to put forward as rule change proposals. In the old days, they used to just go send a letter to the U.S. Equestrian Federation, and sometimes we, as in USEF, wearing my USEF hat, would write the actual proposal so that it was in the right place in the rule book and it said the right thing, so it made sense. Now, U.S. things often go to the Rules Advisory Working Group of USDF so that we advise or we review or sometimes even write rule change proposals for USDF. For USDF now, and this just started in, 2019 was the first year that USDF started this. And I was put in the chair position because I was already so familiar with the process through U.S. Equestrian Federation. The idea was that it would make USDF's job easier if an experienced person was kind of guiding the process. And so that's what I've done. And we have a small USDF committee that reviews things and discusses things. But often something would come up, for instance, from the Sport Horse Committee. There are a couple of rule changes that proposals that have come up in the last year. And I'm on that committee, so I might advise how those things should be written. Sometimes I write it for them, so it'll save less work down the road. But that would go forward to the Rules Advisory Working Group, and then we get input there. And sometimes the rule change proposals from whatever committee will go to other committees to review and see if they have comments or recommended changes. And if there are changes, it has to come back to the Rules Advisory Working Group. And then finally, when we get it tweaked and everybody is happy as they're likely to be, then we send it to the executive board. If they approve, it'll go forward into the USEF system. So basically, there are a lot more steps than there were several years ago. And the affiliate, which is USDF, is a lot more involved in the process than it ever was in the past. When things originate through the U.S. Equestrian Rules Advisory Working Group, they come. The rule proposals come from various sources. Sometimes, since I've been doing it a long time, people will say, I really see a problem with this. I think this rule should be updated or changed, or it's no longer applicable the way it's written. Or in many cases, we get things from, you know, related to FEI has changed its rules, and there are things that we really need to keep the same rules on for our country. So if the FEI makes a change that we need to make a similar change in USEF, we do it. So there are various ways that rules come forward. Also, sometimes somebody might notice a conflict in the rules where a rule one place says one thing, but a rule in another place actually has contradictory or conflicting language, and so we can put forward clarification to improve the wording in something. So there are various reasons that rule changes come forward, and then the USEF Dressage Rules Working Group would work on language for that and make rule change proposals, and then they would go forward to the USDF for review. Significant rule changes are intended to be reviewed by the entire USDF membership, affiliate membership. So, for instance, as you know, Reese, we worked on this updated dress code rules for the U.S. Equestrian Federation, and that was a process that took several months in 2020 when we came up with proposed updated language, and that now has been posted on the USDF website, and members will be able to make comments and will review the comments in our next meeting, our upcoming meeting. The deadline for those proposals, significant proposals like that, to go through is March 1st to the reader discipline rules. So if it's submitted a final version by March 1st, then it's voted by the U.S. Equestrian Federation Board at its summer meeting, and it would take effect December 1st, 2021, which is the date that more significant rule changes are set to take effect. It's always December 1st, which is the start of the competition year. So that's not all the details, but that's a little bit of how things work. I will say another recent job of our U.S. Equestrian Federation Rules Working Group, and sort of my job as chair, we, since you're on both the para-equestrian and para-dressage committee and our rules working group, you were part of our phone calls about trying to update and coordinate the para-dressage rules with the dressage rules that are published for the general dressage rules that are published for dressage competitions and non-para riders. So that was a recent task too, but that's not something we do regularly, but hopefully we have a system now that'll keep those rules more coordinated than they were in the last few years.
Yes. And I think that's one of the things that I've learned sort of coming into the process of being on these committees. We are constantly looking at rule proposals, constantly. So there's a system. And I think, Jeanine, I may have you go back through that, because we look at something and then we have to have it done by a certain date so that it gets in the system. So I think that's maybe what it's a little confusing that somebody will be like, what's said rule? And I'm like, I don't know where it is in the process. So can you just go over that one more time? Because the committees are made up of trainers, judges, stewards, TDs, riders, right, Jeanine? Like there's a whole group of us that go through this and look at all aspects of the sport. And I think that's what people need, like maybe don't understand, is it's a very active group, and it's we are all very active in showing up and being part of this because we know how important it is. But can we just go through that again? And like, because if people want to propose a rule change, you have to do it at a certain time, right?
Yes, you do. But whenever you propose it, people could propose a rule anytime and it would go, but when it gets into the process, it would have to drop into the system so that it's reviewed, and it would still, the earliest time it could take effect would most likely be December 1st after it's put in the system. If it gets in by March 1st, if you propose it in November, well, it can't go into effect just a few weeks later. It would go into the system, be in the proposal form, go through all the review that I explained. If it gets in by March 1st, then, and was approved by all these committees, it would take effect the next December 1st. If it goes in the spring, for instance, it would still go through that process, through the committee process, and be reviewed at the USDF convention in the end of November, 1st of December, and would still go in by the next March 1st. Now, if it's a rule clarification, and this is something where there's a mistake in the rules or some wording conflicts or something has been misinterpreted by enough people that it could be considered a clarification, then USDF allows deadlines through the year to propose something like that. And usually it's a few months before those things would take effect. They do not have to wait till the next December 1st. But back to the two committees that do this. USDF has its Rules Advisory Working Group. USEF has its Dressage Rules Working Group. And they work separately, but the things they look at are coordinated, and things do pass back and forth between USEF and USDF. Also, yeah. I haven't mentioned the general rules, which are the rules that apply to everybody in competition. They're the front of the rule book. That's what a lot of people call them. But it's the general rules, like that has to do with cruelty and abuse. And they're not sport rules per se. those rules can only be written by the USEF legal department. If somebody wants to change a general rule, even our committees, we might actually write up the proposal on our own and send it to them, but they can tweak it and they actually would submit it or approve it to be submitted to one of the general rules. Those proposals have to be submitted by, I think it's August 1st, September 1st. And then they still go through that entire process, and then they would officially go in by the March 1st deadline, unless the legal department thinks they should be submitted earlier, and then they can kind of bypass that a little bit. So the schedule's strict in some ways, but it has its ways to bypass sometimes too. So,
right. So now, to stay active, you know, just a general member, if you are interested and want to stay active, it's very important to stay on the USDF website, correct?
The USDF website posts all of the rules that might impact dressage. So what I'll do, let's just give a specific example. I will get the whole list of proposals. It used to be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, but now it's fewer proposals in the system. They're sort of screened better than they were way back in the day. Mm-hmm. But the proposals go in. This is by another committee that does the screening, which, by the way, I'm on now for 2021. But somebody puts forward a rule change proposal, and even committees do or affiliates do, they would all go through what's called the legislative committee. If they're approved to go in the system, then they start this review process. And this is general rules, everything. So all those things that are in the system before the USDF meeting, for instance, the committee liaison for USEF will send me everything, and I'll go through and read these rule change proposals. Obviously, if they have to do with hunter jumper, if they're in the hunter jumper rules, then I can bypass those because doesn't have anything to do with dressage. But all general rules, all of them, I'll review, determine if they have any impact at all on dressage. They'll go on my list. And then USDF, it's Kathy Robertson now, is in charge of that. She will pull those into a report and post them on the USDF website for committees to review. This year, we got an awful lot of feedback, and it may be because there was the virtual convention and people were just more tuned into the website. So USDF members do have a chance to review all that. Now, they could go directly to the US Equestrian Federation website and look up things as well and comment on the US Equestrian website. I don't think so many people do that now. I think maybe it's a little more difficult to do that than the way USDF has posted these things for dressage. And also, USDF has publicized. Read these proposals. If you have a comment, you can send in the comment thing. And then, of course, the USDF committee has to review all of those. And a report went to the last USEF rules working group as well. That long report, you may recall that one that was 37 yep. pages. So
it was a long thing. It was a long meeting.
That was a long thing. Yes, yeah.
So Janine, I just also had a question about, even since I've come on a couple of years ago, we are getting a lot more equipment and tack and bits and bridles and cavessons. And can you talk about, you know, piece, because that's a huge piece for us. It's very different now than it was before.
Yes. And I would say from the time I started doing this 25, 30 years ago, if we got something every 4 or 5 years, that was usual. Or maybe then it got to once a year. And now I review things, and also Lisa Goretta and often Dr. Hillary Clayton, we get pulled her in on this now. We're looking at things once a week.
Yeah. Sometimes, it's unbelievable the amount of bits.
A few times a week. And that was what I was doing when you called, too. And I filled out emails on equipment that came in now. Oh, I want to use this bridle this weekend. Why isn't it not? When is it going to be approved? Blah, blah, blah. So we have a lot of equipment to review. So the process on that has been, when we started, well, let me back up a little bit. Those people really familiar with the companies that make saddlery and bits and equipment acknowledge that there's a lot more of it now than there has in the past. And I'm told that it's because the manufacturing of equipment has become more streamlined and less complicated than it was years ago. Making machines is now easier to adapt. And a lot of this equipment, for instance, New Shula has a popular bit, or Steuben has a popular bit or bridle that's selling very well. And so some other company wants to do a knockoff, but not infringe on the pattern. So they change it a little bit and give it a different name. And everybody's piece of equipment, everybody's bit is the best thing since sliced bread. It's great. And it's marketing. And these people are very good at marketing. And they send things to us. Well, they didn't before, but then we figured out that you really can't, you don't read the PR, just read that. You have to look at the bit, and sometimes you have to try it. The same with the equipment, the saddlery, to see how it works, because there are principles of saddlery, items of saddlery, tack, equipment, bits, and most of the biggest principle is the welfare of the horse.
Mm-hmm.
And if something is determined that it could harm the horse or make the horse uncomfortable or use an unfair method through pain to encourage a horse to behave in a certain way that might be deemed to be more acceptable for the sport, then we still would look hard at that and most likely not approve that item because we don't feel that it's in the best welfare of the horse. And one example that people don't think about, for instance, a bit that would have pressure on the undue pressure on the horse's palate, a noseband that would cause leverage.
Mm-hmm.
A bit that would cause more than the standard amount of leverage you get through a curb. Remember that a curb bit with a very long shank is not permitted. And we recently looked at, I don't want to mention specific brands, mm-hmm. but some brands of bits that we felt caused too much leverage on the pole and on other parts of the horse's face or area where the bit lays. There are crown pieces on the horse's bridle that extend too far back and put pressure on the horse's neck, on the sensitive nerves. We don't allow those. But for instance, one that would extend forward of the pole and is wide with a forward direction, that's determined that that actually does relieve pole pressure, increase comfort for a horse. And that's a sensitive area around the pole behind the ears. And there's certain standards of saddlery. For instance, the FEI requires English saddle with long flaps for FEI levels. Lower levels in this country, you can use a jumping saddle or, you know, a forward seat type saddle in a lower level dressage class. That's fine. You don't see that very often anymore. But we've had to, in this country, define dressage saddle because there's so many hybrid saddles on the market, some that are hybrid, like a Spanish type saddle.
Right.
What do I want to call it? I'm not thinking of the word right now.
It's Australian, maybe?
Australian's a type, but I'll think of it. But
yeah.
Anyway, there are rules.
Multiple.
That might be one thing we want to cut and pull up later. But those are things that we have rules on, the types of saddlery and equipment.
And Janine, we have that. I think it's a fantastic document, and it's always being changed. Is the Annex A, right? Tell us about that document, and how do people find that document? Because that's a great one.
That's a very good point. That's posted on the U.S. Equestrian Federation website. You do have to go to the dressage page of the website, the national page, and go down to the rules on that. You don't want to go directly If you go to the homepage and you see for rules or rule book, you don't want to go there, but it is only the actual rule book that's there. But if you go to the dressage page and you look down, scroll down, you would see a link to documents related to rules and equipment, and Annex A is posted there. The most current version, edition, I should say, right now as was effective April 1st, 2020. And in the next few weeks, I'll be working with USEF staff and some others on the updates to Annex A. Yeah. But we had so many things proposed. We're still trying to get photographs and everything yeah. good enough to put in.
And that is it's a great document. You can literally be at the horse show and you can pull it up. It's very clear.
Exactly.
And you've done an amazing job with it. It's a good one.
Well, let me just explain if people don't realize what's in it. The first part of it is bits. Right now, I'm looking at it because that's what I was looking up. Somebody asked me about it. It's 36 pages long, but it's in a chart format. And it lists bits, equipment, and bridles are the main examples of what's in it that are legal at snaffles, permitted at fourth level and below. And then bradoon and curb bits permitted with a double bridle, because the rules are different for those two things. Then as far as saddlery or equipment permitted for FEI tests in the USEF rules. And then there, we also have posted what's permitted for FEI for CDIs. And so there are actually five columns and green check marks for when something's legal. Red X if it's not legal. So it is easy to see even on its phone. And if something's pending, there's something that says pending review, because we have a few mm-hmm. items that have been sent in and maybe supposedly they're now manufactured differently so that they would fit our guidelines. And so we still mm-hmm. have some things to review even from last year. But yeah. For instance, that all the bits, most of the bits are organized by brand, not completely, but we've tried to. So we have Milers, we have the Springer bits, there are a lot of Herman Springer bits, we have a lot of Bomber bits, which is a newer company, but that's kind mm-hmm. of gotten popular in the last few mm-hmm. years.
There's lots of Bombers and Neuschula.
Neuschulas, yeah.
So, Janine, we you are so amazing and you're just such a wealth of information. If people have questions or want to send an email, how can they find you? At what committee should they send it to? Give people some direction on where they can start the process if they have questions.
We tell people, and so to keep things standard, they should actually contact the Dressage Department of the U.S. Equestrian Federation. And okay. Hallie Griffin, it's hgriffin@usef.org, would be the one to send the queries to. Now, the reason for doing that is to make sure everybody gets the same answer. You know, if there's a question, then she will come to some of us and we'll review. That's what I was doing just when you call, looking at a question from Hallie. And then we determine the answer to that. In this case, it's something, a bridle that we had turned down before, but now it's listed as pending review. And so I think probably one of the bridles was supposed to be sent to us to review, and mm-hmm. so that needs to be done. So that was, but anyway, contacting Hallie Griffin via email is the best thing. Some people call, but it's a whole lot better when she has things via email. What people usually do if they're asking about a bit, an item of tack, saddlery, or equipment, is to send a link to it, where it's to the manufacturer's link. So we can actually see what it is and see if we want to. Sometimes the answer is clear because we know what it is and we know if it's legal or not. Or Hallie has it, you know, on her list of mm-hmm. items mm-hmm. and she can check. And if it's not, then we let people know we need to, still pending review. So, but that's the very best thing to do. And because people know that both Lisa Goretta and I have been involved in this so long, both of us get questions all the time.
Yes.
And if it's something obvious, of course, we'll tell if it's been answered and the answer is clear, but just the individual just didn't know where to find it or is new or want it to the sport or whatever, we'll tell them what it is. But often we say, can you send a good picture? And TDs find things mm-hmm. that shows all the time that all nobody time. Ever heard of before. People,
use. Right.
And so right. We'll ask for a good photograph. We'll discuss it and often request the office, USEF office, will request that a sample be sent to USEF for us to review.
Right.
And we've kind of learned that the actual review of an item of saddlery is the best thing to do. So.
Right. Well, fantastic. Exactly. I mean, I think again, this is a process and Janine, you're so amazing and you really keep the process going and keep us all engaged in doing it. And I hope people, what they've seen is this is a process that's going on literally all the time. It's always being reviewed. It's always being looked at. And we can't thank you enough for doing it and coming on the show to explain it to all of us. And I hope people, it clears it up. And if it doesn't, send Hallie an email and she can get the information out to where it needs to go. So
and what she usually does is just tell people what the process is. And email, mm-hmm. of course, is a lot easier for her. She's got a lot on her plate now because USEF, as you know, had some staff changes mm-hmm. last year necessitated by the pandemic.
Right.
And so the best thing is to send her an email and she'll let people know if it's under review, what the status is, and let them mm-hmm. know when there's likely to be an answer as to whether something can be used or not if it hasn't yet right. been decided.
Great. So. Well, Janine, thank you so much for all you do for us and the sport and the rules. It's amazing. And thank you again for your time tonight on the program. I really appreciate it.
Well, you are certainly welcome. And we look forward to seeing more people at the shows this summer. And we certainly encourage everybody to contact their TD ahead of time if they have any questions so that they don't get penalized or eliminated when simply finding some information before rather than after is going to serve them to good stead.
Yeah. And the TD's there to help, not to be mean. They're there to help you.
That's
so,
right.
So
and the
feel
TD
free to use
definitely
them.
Want to help. So, yes.
Absolutely. Well, Janine, thank you so okay. much. And we look forward to having you on again.
Thank you so much.
This Nutrition Minute is brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products, the company that simplifies your search for research-proven nutritional supplements at kppusa.com.
The horse that matters to you matters to Kentucky Performance Products. Researchers have confirmed that as horses age, they naturally become less sensitive to insulin and more susceptible to health problems caused by too much sugar in the diet. One way to reduce the sugar content in a horse's diet is to replace sugar-laden grains with a high-fat supplement. Fat is an extraordinary energy source. It is readily utilized by the horse and contains more than 2 times the calories of sugary grains. Equijoule Stabilized Rice Bran is an excellent fat supplement. It contains a balanced calcium-to-phosphorus ratio and won't cause mineral imbalances when added to the diet. Its all-natural ingredients are high in healthy fat and fiber. Best of all, Equijoule allows owners to easily replace the calories previously supplied by sugary grains. When you need to add healthy calories to your horse's diet, choose Equijoule. To learn more, visit Kentucky Performance Products at kppusa.com.
Well, tonight we are so happy to have Charlotte Merle Smith. She is from Ocala, Florida, and she just competed in the CPEDI at Global last week and won the grade 3 team test, was second individual in the individual and third in the freestyle. Charlotte, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you guys so much for having me.
We are so happy. And you are a huge just part of the Horse Radio Network. I can't believe we're just having you on now, but you are a friend of ours and Glenn's, and we just couldn't be happier that you're here today and had such an amazing show.
Oh, thank you. I had a great show, especially because it was the first CDI with my new horse.
Yeah. Tell us about yourself first. Give us your story, and then I can't wait to hear about your new horse.
Okay, so the Reader's Digest version is I was a 3-day event rider professionally until I was hurt in October 2007. I am now a paraplegic, and horses will always be in my life. So I started riding para dressage, and I've had a couple horses, but just recently, well, I got this lot, my new horse in April of this year or of 2020. And so we just did our first FEI competition together.
Yeah. Yeah. And so and you were searching, right? This was, you know, it was, it, you searched a long time for this horse, right? Oh, this unicorn.
Two years.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Years, yeah. It knew it was a long time.
Yeah. And then she was right down the road.
Oh, really? Tell us about her. Yeah. Tell us the story. That is hilarious. You went everywhere too. I know.
So I've gone everywhere. I'd gone to Canada. I'd vetted horses in Canada, in North Carolina, Florida, and all with slightly just a few physical things that as a para rider, I can't post. And so I just I had to keep going with those ones. So this horse was imported by Breck Dressage here in Ocala. And then they had her for like 4 or 5 years and sold her up north. And so she went from Florida fall to Vermont winter. And that didn't work out. And so the woman sent her back down here to be sold after less than a year. And someone was like, "Hey, I heard about this horse over there. You should go look at her." And she's literally less than 10 minutes down the road.
Oh my gosh.
and also my barn had been, my trainer had to keep his barn closed because that's when COVID was just hitting. So I was riding her, going over there to where she was. And then it was so great. I ended up leaving her there. So I got a new horse, a new trainer, a new barn, everything.
Oh, that's awesome. So tell us about your horse. Give us her details.
So she's a 10-year-old Dutch warm blood. She's a girl. Gray. And she had been, she was ready to go I-1, but so there was enough buttons, but not too many buttons in there for me. Because like my last horse has been a lot of time in pee off.
Which a lot of people would think is good, but no.
Oh my gosh. As the adventurer in me was having so much fun, but the para rider
yeah.
was like, but she was just, she's so fun. When you get a good mare, you get a good mare. And she's like, I mean, I've only fallen off her a few times, but it was because I asked the wrong way or I did. It was my fault. Totally. And so now we're just, she's just wonderful. I have been having so much fun.
How old is she?
She's 10.
Oh, great age. Perfect age.
Super age, huh?
Yeah.
That's awesome. So tell us about the show. What happened down here? You came down to Wellington, which I sadly didn't see you. But tell us about your adventure. Yeah. Tell us about your adventure down here. Well,
so my coach up here wasn't able to come down with me for that much time. So I ran with a woman named Ruth Hogan Polson. She was actually the first person I rode with when I got hurt up in Vermont. And she has a place in Vermont in Loxahatchee. So, and she's helped me with my other two para horses, but she, you know, it's a little different for me to come down totally without a coach. So I went down there a week ahead of time because she's like, I want to be able to work things out before you go in the ring. So, yeah, so I was down at Ruth's for, the 19th to the 26th. And then the jog was on, I think on the 26th. And then, yeah, we did the CDI. Yeah. And so it was just awesome.
What was it like to win the team test? I mean, that was like your first big time in the ring and you killed it. How was that?
Oh, I cried. There were definitely some tears. I'm not a crier and there were some tears because I wasn't able to sit and watch the rest of my division. I went back to the barn and we were watching the live scoring. I was like, oh my gosh, this isn't really happening. Yeah. So it was because I had horse shopped for 2 years and I hadn't really been able to get, you know, that feeling you get. Well, you wouldn't know, but when you come off of cross country and you're all,
yeah, all that's true. I would not know.
Oh, you mean,
you're right, girl. I would not know. That is so true. Yeah. I am so scared of that, but yes.
I hadn't really been able to get that feeling again. So I was loving, my horses were amazing. And I was loving riding. I just was missing that extra. And I got it now with Gigi. Like, it's just, it's amazing.
So what's the next step? What are you doing now?
Well, so now I had to figure it out. Well, I had to figure it out, of course.
Yes. I think all of us are like that.
Yeah, there's another CDI in March, but because of the World Equestrian Center here, which is amazing. I actually showed there before the weekend before I went to down south. But I have to decide whether or figure out whether there's going to be enough atmosphere and good enough judges to go back down to Wellington and do the CPEDI again. So I have to decide that. And then there's another CPEDI at Tryon after that, which I'm going to go to.
So cool. And then after that, do you have any more world championships? Maybe Tokyo? I'm just saying. Any of those aspirations?
I put in my application for the team application this year.
That's my girl.
And the team coach really likes her.
Oh, that's so exciting. Oh, my goodness. Yeah,
so even if, you know, who knows if they're actually going to do Tokyo, but it's just, I feel like these are the steps I've been trying to take for years. Like since I got hurt, I've been trying to make these steps in my head and, you know, in the ring. And it's just been going so well.
Oh, it gives me chills. And I'm so excited for you.
Oh, I had one more thing is I had to, and I was able to go down to Roost for so long because I won a para dressage grant from the Dressage Foundation, which helped me with all that time down at Roost in Wellington. It's a bit costly.
Yes.
So I'm just so thankful to the Dressage Foundation for helping me be there.
Fantastic. Well, Charlotte, if anybody wants to follow your journey or follow you on social media, or maybe even contact you, because you are so kind to any para rider that has any questions, how could they find you online?
So I'm trying really hard to get better at it. This is my personal page, Charlotte Merlesmith, and I have a Charlotte Merlesmith, para equestrian, but I don't really post on as much as I should. But then I'm trying to post on my Instagram, which is Helmet Wearer.
Awesome. But, well, yeah,
that's from when I used to snowboard it and I had to wear my helmet.
Oh my gosh, I love it. Well, girl, we are so much in your corner. We're so excited for you on this journey.
Oh, thank you.
And we can't wish you enough luck. And girl, we want to have you back on the show when you go to Tokyo. Is that a deal?
Yeah. Of course.
Awesome. Yeah. All right, girl. Best of luck and keep it up.
Thank you guys so much. Stay warm up there, Phil.
I'm trying. I'm trying. I got my cup of tea. I got my cup of tea here and I'm
okay,
and,
good.
I'm dreaming of palm trees. I'll be able to maybe next winter I'll be back.
Next winter. He'll be back. Yeah, he'll be back with us.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Thank you, Charlotte. We'll talk to you soon.
And now a quick word from EcoGold Saddle Pads. No slipping, no sliding, no problem. EcoGold Secure Saddle Pads are engineered to keep the horse's back comfortable while keeping the saddle in place for a safe, competitive ride. They have impact protection through the seat, and the ultra-thin flaps provide the rider with better communication and a more stable riding position. Available in both English and Western styles, shop the entire collection at ecogold.ca.
Well, today I am so excited to have my brand new friend, Andy Sue. We met last week. We have a connection through the U.S. Pony Club, and I met her here down at Global in Wellington during the CPEDI. Andy Sue, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, we have to say happy 16th birthday, girl.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Today, it's your birthday today, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad you're spending a few minutes with us. That's really fun. I love it.
Of course. It was my pleasure.
Well, you have had quite a big week, right? You're back in California now, but you were down here with us in Florida last week. But I'd like to have you just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So I guess today I'm now 16. I was adopted at 15 months old by my mom and dad, and had a deformed foot, which it wouldn't support my weight. So we had decided when I was two to amputate it. And then when I was five, I started riding, and I got into Pony Club and showing at age 7. And so that's how I started riding and all those fun things.
How did you get into dressage? I want to know what sent you in this direction.
Oh yeah, so I always knew I wanted to do something with horses, and I've always been very competitive. And when I heard about para dressage, I was like, oh, well, that sounds interesting. And then I met in Tryon, actually, just this last year. I was able to meet all of the other para athletes. And I was like, wow, these para athletes are like such like a team and supporting each other. And like, it was just so amazing to see how much like they were there for each other, even though they were like competing against each other. And I really liked that. And I thought, I think this is like what I really want to do, because I enjoy dressage and I enjoy meeting all these other para athletes and feeling like I belong, you know?
That is amazing. So tell us, I mean, one of the tricky parts about being in California is a lot of times you have to come to the East Coast and show here. And typically, you know, it's too cost prohibitive to bring your horse. So you're literally flying in and having to ride a horse that's essentially provided, right? I mean, that's an unbelievably difficult thing to do.
Yeah. I like to consider it as like a puzzle, because like I love puzzles and I love like the challenges that you have to figure out, like what puzzle piece would go to like what horse and what knowledge that my trainers have given me to be able to put onto this horse and give the best out of the horse that I can get. So I like to do that. And also like even like the time frame, the time crunch, I guess, it like, I just love doing that. And I love like figuring out like with like trial and error, you know? And so it's been amazing, like being able to ride all these upper level horses, and they're all special in their own ways. And so it's so fun to create new connections and just everything about it.
So I was going to ask you, what grade do you ride in at the para competitions?
I am a grade 5.
And maybe you could tell our listeners what's included in the grade 5 tests.
The grade 5 tests it's the highest grade that you can be for a para. And what I'm doing is like second level-ish stuff.
Yeah. So you have to fly in, have a horse for a week, and ride a second level test. Like, that's difficult for anyone. That's no joke. So what are some strategies that you've now done this twice, right? Where you've come in and you've done this, and you almost need a horse that's essentially third level. So how do you mentally prepare for that? Like, how do you do that?
Well, actually a while ago I did this teaching class it's called Habits for Horsemanship by Karen Rolf. And I learned the biggest thing that I took away from that was the reflex to relax. And I've used that I've been using that for like my whole entire life, but being able to have her put into words what that is was like just so amazing, to be able to like go in and like be so nervous, and then just being able to take like a big deep breath and being like, I got this, you know, and just relaxing, and which makes your horse relax and works out amazingly.
So Andy Sue, what's next on your agenda for competition?
Yeah. So right now I am planning for the spring to just do local shows, working on, the developing level test. And then hopefully we'll be going to Tryon in June.
Fantastic. Now you have your own horse, right? Can you tell us about your horse?
Yeah. I've had my new horse for about a year now. And he is just learning how to do all the moves, and hopefully I can get him up to the level that I need them. Right now, we are hoping to go first level this spring, and I think we're going to get there, hopefully. But so I have that horse, and then I have my first horse, and his name's Tam, and he has just brought me up the levels and is the perfect, like, training type horse, and he loves everything, and I vented on him. I do dressage, and I go trail riding and did gymkhana and all sorts of fun things. He loves doing the pony club games and rallies and everything.
That is so cool. Well, Andy, see, we want to, first of all, wish you a very, very happy birthday, and we hope you have a great rest of your day. But we can't wait to stay in touch with you and see how your journey continues. And we wish you all the best luck as you go forward.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
No, thanks for coming on our show. We really enjoyed having you. Well, Phil, as you know, what we were talking about the weather here and how crazy it was with the wind, and I really appreciated my stability stirrup leathers from Total Saddle Fit. They are great, and they help keep your leg down and quiet, and who doesn't need that, right? Like, it's amazing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I talk about the crazy winter riding here, and maybe you got to experience a little bit of the weather-related spookiness, and you know, the horses kind of running around. You're going to want to keep your stirrups, and the Total Saddle Fit stability stirrup leathers help you to keep your feet in the stirrups because your leg is going to be stable on the horse. So I think that's a great advantage in these times.
Exactly. So, and they also have just amazing products that we love and we use all the time. So check out TotalSaddleFit.com for all the amazing girths and other products they have. We appreciate them and they're great products.
This week's dressage training tip is brought to you by Total Saddle Fit, home of the shoulder relief girth at TotalSaddleFit.com.
So, Phil, we have a listener question for our Total Saddle Fit tip of the week. What you got for us?
I think this is a really common one, so I think it's great that we can get to this. The question is, do we have any training advice to help with preventing my horse from lifting her head in the canter depart?
Yes.
So I'm gonna hear your words on this first.
You want to hear my words of wisdom?
Well,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think, honestly, this happens a lot, right? I think there's stages in learning a lot of things, right? So this is sort of stages of learning transition to canter. And, you know, when you think about the stage of canter, right, the horse has to go from the 2-beat trot rhythm to a 3-beat canter rhythm, right? So they have to learn how to change their body from one way of going to a different way of going. So for balance, typically the horses will throw their heads up. Right. So that's just the basic of what's happening. So once you sort of know that, then you think, okay, how am I going to teach this horse to gently go from one gait to the other? And, you know, this is a lot of times when I tell people it's really time to start working on their lateral aids and their yielding aids, because the horse really has to learn to bring their inside hind leg a little bit more under their body for balance. So that's a little bit where we start to work on the open side of the circle. For example, we do start to push the circle out a little bit of a leg yield. And once that horse sort of gives to those yielding aids, that will really, really help in the transition to canter because they're also learning how to use their body a little bit differently. So that's one of the exercises that I do. And also it's really important that the rider doesn't get rigid in that transition. It's very normal that somebody, especially as you're learning, gets rigid. And so then the rider typically is going from posting trot and they have to go to sitting trot and then they ask for the canter aid. So a lot of people really struggle with that sitting element. So this is also a time, you know, again, we haven't seen the horse. We're just getting the question. This is also a time that I you know, you kind of also have to talk about sitting trot and what's it like to sit into the transition to canter. So I think it's a time in training. There's actually a lot of things that are going on. Wouldn't you say, Phil?
Yeah, I think it's a very important time.
Yes.
And it's very important for the rider to be working on their aids and timing. Timing is such a huge thing in this, you know, you have to kind of put your inside leg on and then kind of gently bring the outside leg back and all of that stuff. So, I mean, you've got to be really trying to be competent in these moments and direct with the horse that they do listen. And, you know, what I see a lot is that the rider begins to sit and the horse begins to run away a little bit, or the rider begins to sit and the horse is braces their back. And these are all not good things. So I think the first step is just making that transition from rising to sitting and being as smooth as possible and not disturbing the horse first. Right. And so, you know, don't even ask for the canter if that's, you know, if there's any kind of disturbances happening or loss of balance and all the normal things. So what I have to have riders do is being able to rise, then sit. Okay. And everything's still okay. Because we just get really flustered in that moment, and that can be very problematic. And then the next thing is the horse has to accept the inside leg, go towards the outside rein, and then strike off in the canter in the right moment. I mean, a lot of times you'll be doing everything correct, but if the horse doesn't get it in the right moment, it's not going to be pretty. So that's just... This is kind of one of these problems that I kind of say is just time and attack and feeling... Yes. Feeling the right moment. And, you know, a lot of horses need just a little tick with, you know, a little touch with the whip to encourage them, to inspire them. This is an inspiration moment, to inspire them to canter, because, you know, you get kind of lazy horses, or you get horses who are not quick to make the transition. And then, of course, if they're not quick to make the transition, then you can ask all you want, but it'll be in the wrong moment, and then everything falls apart, and the horse speeds up, and you know it all can fall apart fast. And so, you know, connect the horse correctly, okay, and then the next day maybe practice timing on, you know, the horse has to pick up the canter at the right moment. You know, and like I said, it just kind of takes timing and feel. I can stand in the middle of the arena for hours and hours and hours, but I can't tell you what the feeling is until you can get it yourself and then repeat it consistently on your own. So it's one of those. Again, it's just a learning moment, and it can be very difficult. You know, but once you get it, and once you have the right feeling and the right timing, all of a sudden it becomes easy. It's like one of the, you know, it's one of those things that you can't do it until you can do it.
Right. Exactly. No, it's so true.
It's so frustrating. Yeah. It's so frustrating. And then once you can do it, you'd be like, why did that take me months to kind of get, but so hopefully, you know, when it clicks, you can just continue to kind of build your muscle memory and build the horse's muscle memory to make it click every time.
Right. And it does. It just takes time. I think that's also a really good thought there. It's an important time, but it's also a time typically the horses don't have the muscle and that ability. So I think that's also really important to think about. So I completely agree with you. And it is a crucial time, and it may take a little time, but don't be worried about that. It will come. Well, everybody, as always, we love email and Facebook shout outs. Phil and I love to do the trainer's tips. We don't do them all that often anymore, so we always enjoy the opportunity to answer your questions. So keep them coming. We always enjoy it. As always, the United States Dressage Federation is your connection to dressage education, competition, and achievement. Visit usdf.org for more information. That's www.usdf.org, the online destination for dressage. You can find our show notes and links to today's guests on our website, dressageradio.com. Like us on Facebook, just search Dressage Radio Show. Follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. My website is maplecrestfarmky.com, and my email is reese@horseradionetwork.com.
I think the best way to find me is through Facebook, or my email is philip@horseradionetwork.com. I'd like to thank our sponsors for allowing us to put on a good show. That's ProStride, Kentucky Performance Products, Eco Gold, and Total Saddle Fit. Don't forget to check out all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com.
Everybody, keep your heels down, your shoulders back, stay safe, and we'll talk to you next week.